welcome to the Advisor Pact monthly session. I'm Mark Little. This is the place each and every month where members of the Advisor Pact program, that is to say advisors who have committed to making the Advisor Pact pledge, we gather together to answer your questions. Each and every month, you're provided with a monthly project. Each and every one of you are at a different stage of the journey. You're each running your own race and building your own business. So I select from among all your questions each month a handful of questions. Today I've selected two that I think are the most representative, would be the most helpful to the most numbers of members. So let's get right to it. We have two questions. First one is, I have an administrative assistant, a role described as administrative manager in the Advisor Pact program. I'm busy with my own work, but my administrative manager wants to meet with me just to catch up so that we're on the same page. How often should we meet, and what should be on the agenda? This is a great question. It's as though the administrative support people have a different job other than administrative support. And sometimes they do. But the way you describe this is your administrative assistant. And there is a difference between an administrative assistant and an administrative manager, and I'll cover that as well. But let's get right to your question. We've covered this in our monthly projects. Throughout our system, you'll find that a trusted advisor's two primary responsibilities are to invest as much time as possible face-to-face or on the phone, serving ideal clients, or going out and acquiring new ones. Everything else should eventually be delegated. I think most advisors would agree with this. Most advisors are consumed with where is my next client going to come from. And then, of course, once you've acquired a client, you've got an obligation, a commitment to serve them. And in our program, you've made an advisor pact with each and every one of them. It's a pledge to do quite a bit, protection, attention, coordination, in full transparency. So this is where I want to start. So the premise is there are two things you should be doing. And this is, if I had to put a number to it from my own experience, I'd say at least 80% of your week should be invested with these two activities. That means 20% of your week, which is if you're working on a 5-day work week, that's maybe one day a week. One day in five is 20%. So if you're spending 4 days a week serving face-to-face or on the phone serving clients, or face-to-face or on the phone acquiring new clients, then you can invest, let's say, hypothetically, one day a week helping your team coordinate everything else. And everything else should be eventually delegated. So that puts a lot on your team. That puts a lot on your assistant to help take everything off your plate other than these two things. Reminds me of one of my favorite quotes around this is, either you have an assistant or you are one. That's my good friend Bill Bachrach. So there's a lot of truth to that. Obviously, if you don't have an administrative support person, you're doing a lot of administrative support activities. And these administrative support activities, as well as other distractions in the office, pull you away from your two primary objectives, your two priorities, which is face-to-face or on the phone serving clients, or face-to-face or on the phone going out and acquiring new ones. So the premise here is you should delegate as much as possible to your administrative support person, or what you're calling administrative assistant. Now, the way you're couching this question is, it's almost as though, and I'm sure you didn't mean it this way, it's almost as though your administrative assistant wants to meet with you, but to you, you don't see the point. You're busy doing your work. I'm going to assume that when you say you're doing your work, it's these two priorities, which I totally agree with. And but I also agree with your administrative manager's sense or instinct to sit down with you to get onto the same page, all right? Because there's always opportunities to take more off your plate so that you can focus even more of your time on your two priorities. And there's also, you know, businesses are not run in a straight line. Things come up. There's all kinds of distractions that end up on your plate. So the other thing that advisors tend to do is, even if you're spending most of your time with the two activities that are your priorities, if other distractions work their way into your attention, what many advisors do is just put in more hours. So this is the trap that I personally got into many, many years ago and almost left the business. So I totally agree with your administrative manager's instincts to want to sit down with you, to meet with you, as long as the purpose of that meeting is to figure out how to get as many things off your plate as possible so that you can focus even more time during the week with your two priorities. So the overarching meeting objective, now this is from your administrative support person's perspective. So long as the meeting has this objective, I totally agree that you need to be sitting down with your administrative support person. So from their perspective, it's what more can I be doing to remove distractions so you can increase the time you invest face-to-face or on the phone serving ideal clients or acquiring new ones. So long as that's the objective, I am in total agreement that you need to be creating time on your calendar to meet with your administrative support person. So let's actually go through the agenda. And then after that, I'll tell you the difference. I'll go through the difference between an administrative assistant and an administrative manager. All right. So what should be on the agenda? Client meetings should be discussed. Update on preparations for all client progress meetings over the next 30 days. This should be addressed at each and every status update check-in meeting. Opportunities for help and support here. So the whole idea is to get the advisor as much as possible out of meeting preparation. If this is as you become more successful, as you build your team, there are more and more individuals available, subject matter experts and so forth, to do the preparation for meetings. And part of the premise in the Advisor Pack program is ultimately, you know, maybe you don't build a team at the beginning. Most of the Advisor Pack program has to do with shifts in your mindset. In other words, it's a way of the Advisor Pack program is more of a client-centered way of approaching the business in order to, you know, dramatically transform your business to something that is, you know, far more appealing to clients. So in other words, the whole program goes under the premise, if you want more referrals, then you need to be more referable. So most of the things that we deal with in this program have to do with just simple mindset changes, don't require any business model changes, and really don't require your building of a team. However, as you progress, under this premise that, you know, your priorities are two things, then you will, as you increase the success of your business, will be bringing on team members. Well, the point is, it's really the job of your administrative support person to help you assess the skills, current skill level of your team, and to take as many things off your plate as possible in all areas, including meeting preparation. So a daily status check-in regarding what's happening, you know, going meeting by meeting through every meeting for the next 30 days and just discussing the status of that, assessing what still needs to occur for that before the client walks in the door, and making a list of those things and trying to figure out which of those things can be delegated. And a good administrative support person will point out, well, maybe an entire task cannot be delegated, but if you break it down into more bite-sized pieces, maybe many elements of a task can be delegated and therefore saves time for the advisor. So Many times an advisor doesn't delegate just because nobody has made it easy for them. So I'm proposing that at the status update check-in meeting, your administrative support person should always bring up client meetings, walking through each and every upcoming client meeting for the next 30 days, and attempting to identify elements that could be delegated or parts of action items that could be delegated, just simply making it easy for the advisor to delegate. The other is client acquisition. Now, part of this is awareness on the part of your administrative manager, and part of it is actual help and support. So let's kind of go through it. I'm going to introduce a term that each and every month you get a monthly project, and in a few of the monthly projects, we refer to this term PCI time. So PCI time represents that I mentioned before when I said one of your priorities is to invest time face-to-face or on the phone with potential clients for the purpose of acquiring new clients. Okay, so whenever you invest time face-to-face or on the phone with a potential client, that time that you're investing actually face-to-face or actually on the phone, that is your potential client interaction time. And we explain that, you know, you're not going to acquire a new client unless you invest time face-to-face or on the phone with them. So tracking the amount of time that you invest, we call this PCI time, is a leading indicator which your administrative support person needs to be aware of. So in the area of client acquisition, your administrative support person should be tracking the time that you invest, this PCI time, on an ongoing basis. So it needs to be reported to your administrative support person, the PCI time that you've invested since the last time you've been together and had one of these status update check-ins. Your administrative manager should track that. Now, over time, a pattern will emerge, and you need to be very clear as a trusted advisor what the goal is. So, you know, in a perfect world, I'd like to be investing X amount of time face-to-face or on the phone with potential clients. That's PCI time. Because as time unfolds, and some of our monthly projects deal with this, especially the ones about the annual referral rate, but in any event, your metrics will become clear over time. As you acquire clients, it will become clear how much PCI time was required with those clients to acquire a client. And so metrics will emerge out of this tracking. But you should be sharing with your administrative support person the amount of time, the PCI time that you've invested since the last check-in, and they should be tracking it. Secondly, you should be, and they should be asking, and you should be providing the names of all new names of referrals that have been provided. Now, this could be referrals introduced to you from existing clients. These could be referrals introduced to you from other people outside the firm, or they could be what we term, or what Bill Bachrach has termed, self-referrals. And this is simply referrals that you generate yourself, that you go out and you meet individuals out in the world, and you bring those names back as potential clients. Now, your administrative support person should be tracking those names. So each and every day at these status update check-in meetings, the names of all new people should be provided to your administrative support person, and then your administrative support person should be going through the list, and together you should run your finger down the list of all referrals. In other words, follow up on the progress with all other active potential clients. In other words, just a quick pause on each name saying, has anything happened with this individual since the last time we spoke? And what's the next step? Which is truly the most important question. And this is your administrative support person doing two things. One is making sure that time is occurring on your calendar to invest with PCI time, and that it's resulting in something, that there are referrals coming in as a result of this PCI time, and helping you follow up. So there may or may not be roles for your administrative manager in the actual follow-up. I would contend over time. There will be and should be. But even if all that happens is your administrative manager just asks the question, so you've got to pause on each name and answer the question, is there any follow-up on this name? And then you go on to the next name and the next name. A daily update of follow-up progress on all active potential clients is an excellent discipline. And as I'm pointing out, over time, processes and patterns will emerge, which will allow your administrative manager and a better understanding of what they can be doing to help you with this follow-up. So it's mainly, is client acquisition activity occurring? There's a little bit of accountability here. And it's an opportunity for your administrative manager to get in your head and understand a little bit more about the process of, you know, how follow-up occurs with these referrals, these potential clients. And then there always will be some point where the administrative manager or the administrative support person has to know of their existence, because let's say, for example, you schedule an initial client interview. Well, your administrative support person will help prepare the office and prepare for that meeting and so forth, or should be. And so there is an element here of making sure that nothing falls through the cracks just merely by making your administrative manager aware of the fact, well, now you have a list. And this, all the, by the way, is part of the annual recurring revenue exercise, which is one of the very first monthly projects that we provide to you. Okay, so client meetings, client acquisition, update on the administrative support person's priorities and action items. So at any given point, your administrative support person has priorities and action items. Now, on this agenda for these check-ins, and I'm saying for every one of these check-in meetings, this should come up. Now, I believe it should come up so that it doesn't get bogged down into a very long meeting between the two of you. I believe it should come up in this manner. This is the most efficient manner of bringing up the status of your administrative support person's list of action items, without getting bogged down. And we've tested this over the years. We spent 2 years testing different ways of doing this. And these are the couple of questions that need to come up, or issues. This is how this should come up in this quick check-in meeting. So it's basically your administrative support person reporting to you. Here's what's been accomplished this week. So it's first and foremost just a short report alerting you to what's actually been done this week, the status of action items that have actually been completed this week. And then secondly, here's what will be accomplished over the next 5 business days. So it requires a little preparation on the part of your administrative support person coming into the meeting. But this is the manner in which your administrative manager can, in a short and sweet manner, give you a status update of everything that's on their plate. And they can and it helps the advisor know what the action items are over the next 5 days, because you may notice items that actually don't need to be done, or maybe something has changed in a client situation, and there's you know you can relieve your administrative manager of some duties, or it may be that you're aware of the situation has changed and there's some additional things that you now realize the administrative manager's unaware of, and there's an opportunity for administrative help and support on some additional things that have come up related to action items they were planning to do over the next 5 days. But anyway, this is the short and sweet way for your administrative support person to share everything on their to-do list. And then you shift focus to the final item on the agenda. So it's a 4-point agenda. You now shift to agreeing on the priorities for today. So you don't break the meeting, you don't leave the meeting until you've each kind of shared what the priorities are for today. The financial advisor looks at everything on your to-do list. Financial advisor shares with the administrative support person the top 3 priorities. And I would say this should be the 2 or 3 things that have to be done before leaving for the day. And so you have to look down your list of action items and pluck out of that list the 2 or 3 things, I'm going to say 3 things, that you're committing here and now that you're not going to leave for home or leave the office until you get these 2 or 3 things done. And as always, at every point in this meeting, you're looking for any opportunity for your admin help and support. So, you know, maybe they can do some of the things or help you with your projects that you're working on. Maybe it's just that you need help running interference at a higher level in the office today just to avoid the normal distractions of the day. As in, please, you know, if you see anybody heading towards my office door, stand up, go in and block and tackle and see what they need and see if you can keep them from distracting me, whatever. But anyway, you have a long list of action items. This is a discipline where you just pluck the top three and say, these are the three that are the highest priorities today. Now your administrative support person knows. And then you flip it around and look at the administrative support person's list for the day. And so they list everything that they commit to completing before leaving for the day. And it's important that you look at that list and make sure that it's in priority so that they are doing the things on their list in your priority so that if something doesn't get done, it's at the bottom of the list. I always looked at my administrative support person's list when I did these daily check-in meetings. I would, it used to be years ago, a physical to-do list on a piece of paper. Later on, it changed to an electronic list, to-do list that we went through. But back in the paper days, and I'm going to give that as a parting shot for this, is gives you a better visual, because what I used to do is draw a red line. Once everything on my administrative support person's list of action items for today, once I've got that list in priority order, of my priority for them, then I would draw, literally take a ruler and a red pen and draw a line on the list. And I would say, everything above this red line absolutely has to get done before you leave today. Implying that anything below that list, if things got complicated during the day, you know, could be pushed to the next day, and which, of course, we're sitting down the next day and going through all this all over again. So this is the four-point agenda: client meetings, client acquisition, update on your administrative support person's priorities and action items for the next 5 days, as well as what's been accomplished all thus far this week, and then an agreement for what's going to happen today. Financial advisor plucks three top priorities off their list and commits to doing those before leaving for the day, and the administrative support person provides their action items for the day, and the advisor helps prioritize the list and, you know, explains which items have to be done before the end of the day. That is the agenda. I just want to point out that these meetings should not exceed 15 minutes. We recommend that you meet daily, but it, you know, some of you have administrative support people supporting you that don't work every day. So it's either a part-time job or they're not in every single day. So I'm going to say several times a week. It's better if it's daily, but, you know, several times a week for sure. Go through this four-point agenda every single time and make sure that the meeting never lasts more than 15 minutes. If you're meeting lasts more than 15 minutes, what that actually means is that there's something on the list that deserves its own meeting. So just, you know, identify what that item is and say, you know, let's find time later today or sometime tomorrow, whenever. Let's have a meeting just about that. So the point is, the two of you can, in a disciplined way, run through this four-point agenda in less than 15 minutes. I have many administrative managers tell me that it's usually 10 minutes or less. So whatever. So from your perspective, it's only 15 minutes out of your day. If you can't find 15 minutes for your administrative support person to update you and to find, really this leverages your time, and to find and look for opportunities for them to for you to delegate to them or to others in your office, then what's the point of having an administrative support person? So a 15-minute meeting several times a week with this four-point agenda. Now let's deal with what's the difference between an administrative assistant and an administrative manager. Well, to do that, and this again goes back to some of the projects that give to you on a monthly basis. So if what I'm describing is not something that looks familiar, just stick with it. You'll cover this with one of your monthly projects in the future, because we cover this relatively frequently in lots of the projects. So I'm going to start by just outlining the traditional financial services model. So in the the way it works traditionally is clients have all these financial areas of their life. The acronym that we use is FITME, although it's not in order on this infographic, but FITME is financial planning, insurance, tax, money management, and insurance. So I'm sorry, and estate planning. So we call it legal on here. But basically, these five areas are the key. All major financial issues in a client's life will fall into one of these five areas of personal finance. So in the traditional financial services model, yes, they have people in these areas, tax accountant, they've got their money parked somewhere. So they may or may not have a financial planner, but they almost always have a legal or estate planning lawyer, and certainly have the insurance agents. But the point is, in the traditional financial services model, it's left to the client to coordinate all these people themselves. Okay, so they are in the position of providing oversight and coordinating all these different components of their financial life. Now, in our model, insert you as the trusted advisor. Now, you may have come and probably did come from one of these fields, but you've made a decision in the Advisor Pact monthly program that you're going to step up. You're going to step up and fill this role of trusted advisor, where now, rather than the client coordinating things, you're going to coordinate things. Now, before you build your own team, it may mean that what you're doing is coordinating the people that the client has hired. So it may just simply be in the early days that you're coordinating people that the client has already put in place. And so, but the point is, you're the intermediary between the client and the team. All right. So, and getting these five areas in perfect financial shape. So you're responsible. The problem is time and attention. So in Advisor Pact, the A in the acronym PACT stands for attention, and you want to pay ample attention, ample and sufficient attention to the client. So if you know, at some point it's a function of how many clients you have and how big your team is. So once you've got a team in place, and once you have, I'm going to say more than, I don't know, five ideal clients, it becomes harder for you to give the client the attention they need. And in comes this administrative manager. So you've got ideal clients, and then you're facing the ideal clients, you're interacting face-to-face or on the phone with the ideal clients, and when you're not, you're investing the rest of your time face-to-face or on the phone going out and finding new ideal clients, and you have hired an administrative manager to coordinate the team. So whereas before you were coordinating the team, now the administrative manager is coordinating the team. So the difference between an administrative and an assistant and an administrative manager are as follows. Let me list typical administrative assistant duties first. First is obviously administrative support, calendar management. That might be things, and typically are things, like setting client appointments, confirming appointments, and organizing and managing the financial advisor's calendar. So these are typically things that the administrative assistant does. Oftentimes it's paperwork and file management. That would be things like organizing, managing the files, filling out forms, following up on forms so that the advisor doesn't have to follow up to make sure that forms were received and acted upon and so forth. I'm gonna put this next section under the broad category of office management. So answering phones, reordering office supplies, managing the vendors and keeping them away from the advisor, and overall just protecting the advisor's time. So these are all typically administrative assistant duties. If all you have your administrative support person doing are things like this, then it's an administrative assistant. Now, how will they elevate or become an administrative manager? Well, an administrative manager does everything already listed. So, or if you have a big operation, let's say over 15 ideal clients, 15 or 20 ideal clients, and a full team in place, let's say 5 subject matter experts, then sometimes there's an additional clerical person in the office that helps do some of these administrative assistant duties. In other words, your administrative manager may delegate some of these, which means they are sometimes oversight, responsible for oversight only, as opposed to actually doing the task, but they are accountable for everything on the administrative assistant list, either doing it themselves or making sure it gets done. And then in addition to that, there are several things that are their duties. I'm going to say the first thing is subject matter expert coordinator. So you have subject matter experts. As you grow and you add ideal clients and you follow our system, then you will be acquiring subject matter experts. Now, some of you are doing this on a shoestring budget, and you don't have a budget for this, which is no problem, because we teach you, in the monthly project on this issue of building a team, we teach you how to do this using the client's money. So you don't really spend any of your own money building your team of subject matter experts. You acquire subject matter experts under the condition that they only do work once you've acquired a client to pay for them. But regardless, it's mainly what's the administrative manager's responsibility once you do begin acquiring subject matter experts on your team? Well, it's your administrative manager's responsibility to make sure that all client progress meetings are prepared for well in advance. So that responsibility shifts away from the advisor and on to the administrative manager in terms of coordinating with the subject matter experts who are actually doing the work preparing for client progress meetings. In addition, your administrative manager is the one who ensures that every subject matter expert is actually collaborating with the other members of the team. So one of the responsibilities of a subject matter expert, what actually makes it a team, is not a subject matter expert just sitting there operating on their own, doing their work in isolation. Yes, they will do quite a bit of that. That's why you hired them, is to perform skilled work within their narrow field of finance, that's for sure. But what makes it a team is that subject matter experts actually collaborate with the other members on your team. So this is something that subject matter experts are typically not accustomed to doing, and becomes a responsibility of someone. Before you have an administrative manager, it's your job to make sure they collaborate. And once you have an administrative manager, what makes them an administrative manager as opposed to just an administrative assistant is they are capable of ensuring that these team members collaborate with each other. And it's your administrative manager who is responsible for making sure that there are 3 performance reviews on your calendar, one-on-one meetings with each subject matter expert 3 times per year. We call these subject matter expert expectations conversations. All right. So 3 meetings annually, that's 1 every 4 months on the same rough schedule as you have 3 client progress meetings with every ideal client. So this is a performance review, and it's your administrative manager who makes sure that happens. So the next thing is what I would call project leader. So the biggest difference between an administrative manager and an administrative assistant is their understanding of what you're trying to do, and making a commitment to push for forward progress with big goals and objectives. So for example, an administrative manager, once you have one, will make sure that there's forward progress with the advisor packed program implementation. So each and every month, you get a monthly project. We send it to you. It's up to you to make sure it gets done. But once you have an administrative manager, it becomes your administrative manager's responsibility to look at the monthly project, to assess how much time it's going to take to implement, because we give guidance on that each month, and then just blocks time on the calendar and pushes you and pushes everybody else on the team, whatever's necessary, to make sure that it gets done by the deadline. So there's a goal for each monthly project in terms of an end date for getting it completed. And it's your administrative manager who's now responsible for making sure that it gets done on time. So all I'm saying is this is something that the advisor used to do, but, you know, you were making it sound like the administrative assistant and an administrative manager are interchangeable when they're actually quite different. So another thing in the project leader category would be just establishing action items and timelines for implementing truly comprehensive financial services. So for most advisors, this idea of expanding and becoming more comprehensive, doing more things for the client, taking things off the client's list of action items to make their life easier, all of these things are big objectives within truly comprehensive financial services. And, you know, that's a big project for your team. It's to improve the value that you're providing to clients over time, which is what truly comprehensive financial services is all about. But it's a shift from you as the financial advisor making sure that that happens as a project moving forward progress, and versus your administrative manager making sure that that gets done. So that's a project leader role. And then finally, and this is a biggie, once you fill your team, having vacancies on your team of subject matter experts becomes the responsibility of your administrative manager once you have one. Whenever there's a vacancy on your team of subject matter experts, it's up to your administrative manager to manage the process and the 60-day timeline. In other words, to push everybody on the team to make sure that that vacancy is indeed filled within, you know, by the deadline, which our process, and if you've had the monthly lesson of fulfilling a vacancy, it's called the deliverables team recruitment process. That process is designed to be completed in 60 days or less. And so it's your administrative manager that serves as the project leader to make sure all these things happen on time. And I would say, to sum it all up, it's a responsibility of your administrative manager to make sure there's forward progress. An administrative assistant, you know, literally just comes back to you on a regular basis and, you know, and asks you, what's next? What else can I do to support you? And it's kind of driven by you as their manager. An administrative manager is self-managing. It's the difference is somebody who has slightly more responsibilities, coordinates, you know, meetings, client meetings, and makes sure all major projects are moving forward. So that's the difference between the two. Next question. This is the last question for today. I appreciate these monthly Q&A sessions. I pick up so much. In past sessions, you've described many paradigm shifts which represent differences between what the financial services industry typically teaches a financial advisor and what successful affluent clients actually want. Every time you've described one of these, I've totally agreed. It's true in my experience. Could you lay many of these paradigm shifts out for me? I'm curious if there's a list. I'd like to think about their implications upon the big picture of my business. Many thanks for all you're doing. I can't tell you how helpful it is. Let me just tell you that, you know, this term paradigm shift is kind of an overworked phrase. I think what you mean, and I would totally agree with this, there are some basic premises of the Advisor Pact methodology that flies in the face of the traditional financial services industry. Mostly it has to do with focusing on what clients need and want and what they're willing to pay the most for, which is kind of odd, but it is not the approach that the industry typically takes when it comes to figuring out, you know, how to serve clients. So, I'm not 100% sure what you mean by paradigm shifts. I would agree that almost everything we teach, at least the fundamental concepts, are different and drastically different than is laid out in the industry. So I think I will answer your question this way. Here's what does exist. Now the other thing is, what I'm going to go through right now is fairly advanced for the Advisor Pact monthly program. So the advisor who submitted this question has been in the program for a while, has implemented quite a few monthly projects, quite a few, and is pretty far down the path with us. So I'm going to lay some things out which become apparent as the monthly projects are implemented and completed over time. And if I say something that isn't 100% clear to you, it's probably that it is because you have not, either you have not yet reached the monthly project that that I'm talking about, or you just haven't implemented it yet. And so I'm going to go through these, and if some of this is a little bit unclear to you, or it stimulates your thinking like, wow, that's exactly what I need, and it's just something that you have not gotten that far in our program yet, maybe all this does is stimulate for the rest of you some questions. So I'm going to answer, as always, the question that was asked. So this advisor asked a specific question. So in a sense, I'm just talking to that one advisor. But I thought this would be helpful to everyone, because even if you've just started the program, this may just give you a heads up as to what is to come. All right, so I'm going to say that the uncomplicated premises which represent the seven golden threads which run throughout the Advisor Pack program are, number one, clients want two primary things. The basic motivation of a client when they're seeking an advisor, they want an advisor who's competent and an advisor who's worthy of trust. Competence is on display during every interaction with a client or a potential client. So every time you talk on the phone, every time you interact by email, every time your team interacts with them, and most especially client meetings, competence is on display. So your client is constantly assessing you and your competence based on interactions, especially client meetings. Now, trust is a little bit different issue. Trust begins when competency that you display during these interactions exceeds your client's expectations. So imagine it the other way. Let's say you're not even meeting your client's expectations. Forget exceeding them. If every time you interact, you're not meeting your client's expectations, then it's not going to build trust. As a matter of fact, it's just the opposite. It could lead to the client wanting to change advisors. So trust actually is earned over time, and it begins when the client starts seeing this competence displayed during the interactions consistently, okay? So, or that it exceeds their expectations, sorry. And the relationship is built upon trust, and that is what I was talking about in the consistency. So where trust is actually built more and more solid, it's just the accrual of an unbroken string of these interactions where you have exceeded your client's expectations. And that's what I was saying is consistent competence. It's not just here and there. It's not just one out of every 10 interactions exceeds your client's expectations. It's more or less a consistent unbroken string of interactions where you're exceeding expectations. And this string of interactions with your clients and your potential clients, we call that the client experience. And this is something that many advisors, they're just unaware of. They're aware of it, but they just don't think about it. And they certainly don't craft the client experience. So this string of interactions with your clients and potential clients is called the client experience, which, if carefully orchestrated, will lead to clients who are pleasantly surprised and elated, happier than they thought they would be with the relationship. So it's basically the client experience. And the point or the premise is that this client experience doesn't just happen on accident. It can be and should be. And the advisors who do carefully orchestrate what the client experience is are the advisors who have clients who are happier than they thought they would be with the relationship. And six of seven is that relentlessly saving your clients time and making their lives noticeably more convenient will place you in a different category from other financial advisors, since the value provided is unique in and rare. So you are placed in a different category, all right, by relentlessly working to take things off your client's to-do list, making their life more convenient. These are the things that put you in a unique and rare category, all right? And then seventh, therefore, regular and frequent client referrals, which are spontaneous and unsolicited, represents the natural behavior of clients whose standards and expectations are consistently exceeded. Okay, so this is the bottom line, and this is what we talk about quite a bit. It seems to come up in these Advisor Pack monthly sessions, but it is that when an advisor first enters the program, if we used to ask regularly, you know, how many spontaneous and unsolicited referrals do you receive from your existing clients? At what pace? And the answer is, used to be, and if because when we used to track this, that it's rare and unusual. In other words, it does happen, but not at any pace that you could grow your business on or count on grow for your business survival. So what we point out in the program is that you, if you follow steps, the golden threads 1 through 6, these premises, that's actually not true, what is natural behavior is for a person who is thrilled with the service that they're receiving to go out and share that with everybody that they care about. So, you know, we make the point throughout our program that spontaneous and unsolicited referrals represents really natural behavior, and they should be just flowing in. And that is the measure of how well you're doing, golden threads 1 through 6. So once you get to the point where you've implemented the Advisor Pack program, and I would say these 7 golden threads, the result is you're going to start seeing your calendar filled with meetings, appointments with potential clients who want to work with you. That is how this works. And it's because your existing clients just can't help themselves. They want to share the good news and with everyone they care about, and you're the good news. There's something or there are things that you do that are just so mind-blowing to them and so helpful and so useful, so indispensable to them, that when the subject of money comes up with people that they care about, they just can't, you know, I've got to tell you what just happened with my advisor. You know, they did this, that, or the other. So those are the 7 premises. Now, let's actually go through. I went back and I looked at what I would say are the 9 transformational fundamentals of the Advisor Pack program. This is little comments that I've made in past sessions, and I actually looked at all the monthly sessions looking for what are the bottom line takeaways of all the monthly sessions once you've implemented the Advisor Pack monthly program. So you're running your own journey. Once you're, you know, at least 16 months into the program, you know, you should start to be feeling this. Number one, you absolutely can design your business around your strengths and the things you most like to do, including the clients you most want to work for. Hopefully, we have opened up more options for you in terms of strategy versus tactics, sales versus service, and exposed for you one of the biggest untapped opportunities in our industry, and that is that there are millions of multimillionaires out there who cannot find the advisor that to do things that they want to have done. And that we've never seen the opportunity as great as it is right now, especially in terms of the level of affluence of the clients looking for an advisor that they claim they cannot find. So you have an opportunity to fill the gap. And that gap is strategic. What's missing in the lives of these clients is strategy and oversight, that there's no person in the average affluent, successful individual's life to help them create strategies to accomplish their objectives. And also, there's typically no oversight. So the client's coordinating things themselves, and there's nobody to look at recommendations to determine if they are indeed the best recommendations and most suitable recommendations for that client in their situation. Number two, by putting your clients and their perspectives first, this course, the Advisor Pact series of monthly projects and courses, has identified three basic types of clients and what each really wants from their financial advisor. These insights reveal opportunities to serve clients in ways they have never seen before and establish your reputation as the go-to person in your community. So the three basic types of clients are do-it-yourselfers, do-it-with-me's, and do-it-for-me's. So people do it yourself, or so the premise is, don't try to change people's personalities. You know, not everybody wants an advisor coordinating everything for them and willing to pay top dollar for, you know, all the big gaps in the marketplace, of which there are many that you can fill. But there are clients out there. So it's not the do-it-yourselfers and it's not the do-it-with-me people, that clients that want collaboration with an advisor. It's the do-it-for-me type of client. And it's the idea that, you know, don't sell. You know, we reject sales as even being in any way necessary. Sales is a successful strategy. It certainly works. But our point is, it's unnecessary. That if you find those personality types, the do-it-for-me's, the people who want you to do things for them and are happy to pay for those things, and there are a long list of things that they can't seem to find anybody to actually do for them, you fill those gaps, you'll be the go-to person in your community, because it's just there are not advisors out there willing to do that. Which leads us to number three: by consistently exceeding your clients' expectations, you can flip the script on client acquisition. Instead of hunting down new potential clients, you can attract them in the manner they would prefer to find you. Hopefully, you now realize that most people will compulsively give you unsolicited referrals when you provide them with an extraordinary client experience. You can really become the only game in town. So it's this merger of client of competence and delivering that competence in a way that is an extraordinary client experience. And by consistently exceeding your clients' expectations, they will become your marketing department. And you, sales is unnecessary, because they know enough people over time. Your clients know enough people in their life and their history and in their daily interactions and in their life experience, they already know more people than you could possibly work with. So this is what we call flipping the script on client acquisition and creating a more, a situation where your clients take over that function of client acquisition for you. Now, fourth are the six fundamental laws of client service. Now, we've covered them in these monthly sessions. We also have a project on those, a monthly project. So we have six fundamental laws of client service. If you're unclear on what that is, or if you haven't received the monthly project about that yet, you can go hunting through these monthly past episodes of the monthly session, and you can find discussions of this. Our six fundamental laws of client service make it clear that as a financial advisor, you need to understand your client's perspectives and then impress your clients with a carefully crafted client experience that consistently exceeds their expectations. These insanely happy clients will find you indispensable to their lives and brag about you to everyone that they know. Number five, a client who isn't sending you referrals is a sign that you aren't exceeding their expectations and that you have an opportunity to improve your client experience. This course, this advisor-packed monthly course, series of courses, has unpacked several sources of disconnect between client and advisor, things that are seldom intuitive or obvious. And once you start exceeding your client's expectations, they can't help but talk about you every time the subject of money comes up. Number six, clients are always assessing your competence. and your client meetings are where your competence are on display the most. Clients value meetings that aren't a waste of their time, and you have an opportunity to craft an extraordinary client meeting experience with your client leaving every meeting with an overwhelming sense of confidence that they're on track and making forward progress. Number 7, rather than most financial reports and statements clients receive, they prefer simple reports which conveys the information most relevant to their financial situation and goals. Most of all, they want to know they're on track in each of their major financial areas of their lives, and they want to know what action items are required to remain on track. So the message being, the transformational message being, is clients hate, in broad numbers, I'm saying the data shows, on average, the average client, affluent client, dislikes financial reports and statements that they currently receive from their institutions and their financial advisors. So we've studied that, and we have established some parameters, what I call essential elements, that of things that you show your clients. And this is transformational. The idea that if you stick to the transformational fundamentals that we talk about when it comes to things you show and put in front of your clients, then you know, this represents something that's a complete and total departure from what the financial services industry puts in front of clients in terms of reports and statements, which data shows clients dislike. Number 8, we all have the same 168 hours to manage each and every week when it comes to time management. So, however, rather than time management, it's priority management which matters most. There's always one single task at any given time that you need to be doing, even if it doesn't seem urgent in the moment, to be on track for your highest priorities. For everything else, dump it, delegate it, or delay it if possible. So the point that's transformational that we make is something that you intuitively know. At any given moment, there's a single task that you know you should be doing that is the most important thing. And we have an entire set of content on this because there's so much interest on the part of advisors on this issue of time management. But we flip it around and we show you that it's actually a concept called the critical path, and you are in the critical path. You're always focusing on the critical task. But the good news is, intuitively, you always seem to know most talented advisors tend, and even beginning advisors, most people know what the most important thing they should be doing right now. And number 9, technology. So thinking about technology, because many advisors make the mistake of thinking, you know, technology is the dividing line where clients make the decision of whether to or whether not to hire an advisor, when in reality, technology is simply a set of cool tools, and what clients are looking for is a relationship. So technology can improve your performance, but your clients prefer interacting with people more than technology. To leverage your time, you're going to need other people that you can delegate to. You can scale as large as you want while continually improving the client experience until you've created an experience that can only be delivered by a team. So rather than the client, yes, there are technological things that a client is looking for, and if they're missing, it would be a warning sign. But what I'm saying is many advisors take it too far, and they think that it's the technology that has to be in place before a client will hire you, when it's just the opposite. The more and more technology improves, and you know, these robo options where clients can go online, you know, they can go online and do lots of things on their own using technology. The actual dividing line is opposite of technology, that what the more successful and the more affluent people are actually looking for is a relationship with a financial advisor who, quote unquote, gets me and is able to, you know, organize all the elements, financial elements of a client's life to actually accomplish objectives. So it's the things that, that technology and machines are the least capable, are the least competent at doing, which is what clients are looking for and are willing to pay the most for, and it is interaction with people and a person like you. So that's it. That's it for this episode of the monthly session. And as always, we wish you all the best in implementing. Until next month, I'm Mark Little.